rolling again.
All right, RevDoc says we're rolling, so it looks like Free Radical Radio has come out of the grave. I guess it was a temporary grave. It was only in the grave for a couple months. There's been some transition on the radio show, so I guess the best thing to do is talk about it vaguely. Yeah, Bellamy's not doing the show anymore. You can feel free to email him or us and figure out what else he's doing, but he's doing other shit that you'll probably hear about if you're so inclined, so that should be forthcoming. But Free Radical Radio is back to recording shit-talking, news, fanboying, wild reaction, even though they don't exist anymore, apparently. What else goes on here?
Dating.
Dating, ranting.
Questions.
Questions. Wrongdoing. Would I say Macedonio Fernandez, probably the greatest author in the history of the world, not named Herman Brock or John Gray, once said, after wrongdoing, the worst thing one can do is think about it. So I don't know what relevance that has here, but...
We'll find out.
So today's show, we're going to do a little bit of housekeeping, I guess. That's what they always say on the podcast, housekeeping. So we're going to talk a little bit about the show, where we're going, and we're going to talk about scenes, subcultures. I'll finally get around to a little bit of talk about Seattle. And Squee might have some stories, right?
I got a little bit.
A little bit. We'll see what Squee has to offer today. Yeah, so in case you've noticed, we've been putting out some audiobooks lately, or audio essays. Is it an audiobook if it's just an essay?
I don't know. I've spoken, recorded, originally on text, into mouth.
Mouth to ear.
Mouth to ear.
Or mouth to computer. For people who are into the cybernetics thing, I guess audiobooks is some like next level kink, really.
Got it.
Or just early level kink, I don't know.
Throwing some acid. Put on the Timothy Leary.
Yeah. So I put out we. I just don't like when people use the we when they did something. You know, people always like I like using the royal we. I'm talking, you know, when I'm talking about myself. Sometimes people use we when it's like behind a project. Actually, Hostess does this when they talk sometimes. Or that we put out a presentation on. We put out a recording from the Seattle Anarchist Book Fair by one of the people who does Hostess Journal, the Hostess Journal, which you can find through Little Black Cart, and they used we a lot when they were talking about who wrote it. And I'm like, okay, why don't you just own up to what you said, you know? Like, I really liked it, the presentation, obviously, which is why I put it out, and I hope to get an interview from them soon. But at some level, I'm just like, say I. Don't be afraid. You know, don't be afraid to say I.
I did notice that. I thought it was a little awkward listening to it.
Yeah.
I wasn't there for the original, so I got the mouth to recording
to the ear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the direct. I was really unmediated. I was deatomized, one might say.
Just mouth to ear.
Yeah, there was all the atoms together. It was beautiful. It was you know, I imagine what happens at the Large Hadron Collider, you know, it was just atom to atom. Electron to proton to neutron to black matter. I'm not really sure what else is in there. But anyways, RevDoc's looking at me like I don't understand science when actually, I got my PhD in biochemistry, which people don't realize.
I definitely did not realize.
A lot of people don't realize that. Yeah, I spent a long, hard 12 years at MIT in my between the ages of 8 and 15. People don't realize that. It's a true story. So anyways, the other talk that's going to come out later. So we put out the cruelty thing. We also put out Lupus Dragon Owl's piece against identity politics, which is also, you can find it in AJODA, a journal of anarchy desired, of anarchy armed, a journal of anarchy, desire armed.
Anarchy, a journal of desire armed.
This is what most people call it, what you just said. So that's where that piece can be found. And a couple friends from across the pond, I finally get to say that, I'm never going to say that before. A couple friends from across the pond put that together for us out of the UK. So that was pretty sweet. And that's just something I hope to do more. So if anyone records any audio that they think is interesting, feel free to throw it our way. I have audio of daggers drawn, actually, that also someone sent to the radio that I'm more or less deciding if I want to put out, because I feel like it's the ugly stepfather or something to our friends. So I have some mixed feelings about it.
Right. You don't have the historical experience in the context for it.
No, not at all.
And maybe that's a better way to judge it than a nostalgic fucker like me, who's just going to be like, yeah, yeah, that's the text. That one came out and it was yeah.
I did fall asleep to it, listening to it when I thought I was going to edit the other day, but instead I just laid in bed and fell asleep listening to it to decide if I was going to edit it the next day. And, you know, it keeps saying, like, daggers to this, daggers. And I kept thinking about it at work. Like, every time someone did something I didn't like, I was like, daggers. And I was just, like, imagining pulling them out of my thing, out of my sides. And I'm like, oh, daggers to you, daggers to this. It's mostly to small children who I have the daggers towards, but sometimes my boss.
That sounds like a very old word to me, like, oh, rats. Oh, daggers that.
I mean, I think daggers is an old word. Now people have, like, a Glock or something, whatever gun people like.
Cloak.
And dagger.
And dagger.
All right. The setup was a little too easy there. So, yeah, I think we're going to keep going in that direction. I at least definitely have some science fiction short stories and stuff I want to put out. I'm going to use the radio website as a vessel for that. And probably some other anarchist theory shit, whatever gets sent our way or whatever we feel inspired to come sit in a dark room and record. So that's the other thing that's going on. Yeah, other than that... Let's see. The other reason we've taken a little bit of a break between the show is Squee here had some went through some physical pain.
Yeah, I had a trauma incident with the my foot.
Yeah, it was both your feet, it seemed like.
Well, eventually it worked its way up to my whole body, so I couldn't do anything for a couple weeks. I was just stuck in a bed and on the couch.
So what happened to you? Were you trying to get full communism achieved the other night and it just went wrong?
I was practicing my parkour.
Oh, good.
And I was trying to, you know, land this fucking jump from a second story balcony.
Were you doing the double Lindy again?
Yeah. And it, you know, I landed it. It was great. I forgot to roll. Did not disperse the energy. I did not put it out there. I just held it all within. Went right up my body, broke my heel, sprained my other foot, sprained my hands.
Yeah, brutal. So do you have, like, pieces of heel they're going to remove or something? Is that what the plan is?
No, I broke my heel into a few different pieces, and they got to put them back together with nuts and bolts and whatever they have.
Is there any chance you can do, like, an Ethan Hawke and Gattaca situation here and get them to stretch you out a little bit to get another inch or two taller?
Well, if they're going to do it to one foot, I don't think it'd turn out anything but, like, a Ripley's, believe it or not.
Yeah, that might not work out so well. I guess you'd have to re-break the other heel and do a whole double stretch thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Not worth the effort.
All right. Well, something that is worth the effort, apparently, since Squee and I have involved ourselves in it, is the East Bay Anarchist Book Fair. Sometime in December. I don't know. You can go to the website. But we're going to read the call out for it, since we're actually actively looking for people who want to give talks there and people who want a table and all that. So I guess I'll read it because I'm closer to the computer. So unless you want to.
I can't see that from here. No.
Okay. So I'm going to do it. Here we go. So this is the call out for the East Bay Anarchist Book Fair in case you're interested in participating. Here we go. Anarchists talk more about living than dying, but raging all around us is a debate about whether we have entered a new age, what has become known as the Anthropocene. While academics debate when this age might have started, it is beyond debate that Homo sapiens have dramatically and permanently altered the planet. Despite living in an age where we are faced with the horrors of mass extinction, global climate catastrophe, and the increased desperation of governments to secure resources and borders, anarchists have made few contributions to these discussions. They remain largely in the realm of scientists, academics, politics, and business. Non-anthropocentric views and values are few and far between in regional anarchist scenes. Is the, quote, non-human an inhuman topic? These topics are so taboo that even approaching them with other anarchists can elicit accusations of fascism, genocide apology, and counter-revolutionary armchair misanthropy. Wow, that was quite a sentence right there. Objections of cruelty, abjection, and horror invariably accompany contemporary talk of the, quote, non-human aspects of our crisis. But do they have to? Can there be an anarchism that lives outside the box of the human social project? And then a couple suggested topic discussions are Anthropocene, animism, that's a very difficult word for some reason, artificial intelligence, social media, religious anarchism, you get the point. So either way, it's happening December 5th at Humanist Hall, 10 a.m. It's kind of far away. We'll probably talk about it again. But if you want to, I guess we should give people the email address to write to.
Well, just in case you don't understand what the overall theme is, it's supposed to be the inhuman. So either that could be taken to mean like environmentally not human or aliens or robots or just being a cruel piece of shit that no one would recognize as a moral human being.
Something else. Something different.
Yeah. And then the Anthropos scene is sort of like another thread that runs through that, kind of like a thread runs through a fabric, as Rev Dog sews over there.
Doc.
Doc.
You always call him Rev Dog.
I'm a reverend and a doctor, damn it, not a reverend and a canine.
Yeah, so me and Rev Doc are both doctors. I have my biochemistry PhDs, and Rev Doc
but
has...
But mine's real.
Well, you know.
I'm just an experiment.
Yeah, so feel free to email the Book Fair people. We have an email address you probably find online if you look it up. info@eastbayanarchist.com.
Yes.
And you'll probably get a 50% chance Mir Squee responds to you or someone else.
Yeah, there's a 1 in 4 chance it'll be one of us.
No, there's a 1 in 2 chance it'll be one of us.
2 in 4 chance it'll be either of us.
And if you divide them both by 2, you get 1 out of 2. If you reduce the fraction, that's called reductionism. Reductivism. I'm having some problems with math. That's, you know, that's the problem when you get a PhD at such a young age. All right. All right. No throwing things in the studio, Rev Duck. Trying to keep, this is a professional.
Rev Duck?
Rev Duck. This is a professional operation. So I guess I'm going to talk about the Seattle Book Fair a little bit since we're sitting in here talking. And I know the one thing that happened was I took some ride shares up there and drove through the night for 12 hours straight and definitely fell asleep at the wheel and almost killed both of them. And then the funniest thing that happened was both these ride shares were just like random people. I was trying to save money on my way up there, which was sweet. You know, just whatever liberal type Bay Area people riding up with me. And one of them, you know, I basically spent the whole time arguing with veganism in a somewhat friendly way with this guy. Not the whole time, but like that was the gist of the, or the thrust of the, our conversation. And pleasant enough experience, just random, you know, nothing special about it. But he ended up texting me probably 2 days after he got out of the car and said, "Hey, I left a power bar in the backseat of your car and I'm really looking for closure. So I hope you can return it to me."
The thing you eat.
Yeah, the thing you eat. So, which I think cost about $1. So something about this to me was just one of the strangest text messages I've probably ever received in my life. Was he was looking for closure from our little drive up from the bay to Seattle by me returning this power bar, which I am not going out of my way to return this power bar to this person, obviously.
Were they the vegan?
Yeah.
So they wanted to know if you would eat it or not.
I think they understood that I would eat anything.
That was their problem. They needed closure.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he was just coming on to me or something. Like maybe he was trying to get like another hang. I'm not really sure what was going on. But if that wasn't it, that would be the least weird of the things, was if he was trying to get a date or something or get another hangout. But I think it was just something else, like some type of...
Just assume the worst. It was a very special power bar.
Oh, I see.
And that the worst possible thing you can assume about that is they thought you would eat it.
Yeah, so anyways, I did eat the power bar. That's what happened. And, well, the truth, I don't know why I just lied right there. The true story is I didn't find the power bar. That's the true story. I didn't eat the power bar. That was just a blatant lie. The true story is
you're
I didn't.
Admitting to the power bar.
Yeah.
But.
The true story is I didn't eat it. I guess in other news, we still have a bunch of Free Radical Radio t-shirts. Rev Doc's wearing them right now. The contrast sucks. We never, probably wouldn't really charge people for these because...
That looks good, though.
You think it looks good?
Yeah, it's a whole stylistic...
Okay. Well, either ways, if you want to send a couple bucks for shipping, I'm more than happy to go mail a t-shirt to someone because we still have, like, 20 left and we're trying to get rid of them. So if that's of interest to you, feel free. I did think that there's... Squee, you know something about Antifa people, I think, a little bit coming from Arizona. Maybe we're going to talk about this more later, but I just want to say that the people... in Portland at the Antifa table, you couldn't look more like you belonged at that table than the people there. I felt like it was really funny, the stereotype. And then also I felt like the people at the post-scarcity anarchism table at the Seattle Book Fair also were doing that. I think one was wearing like a kimono or something, and another person had some type of scarfy thing. I'm not really sure how to explain how these people were dressed, but one of the post-scarcity anarchist people, you know, like the Book Tonight, like the real like hard-ons for Rojava type people.
Right.
People that think post-scarcity anarchism is a thing that makes sense, mm-hmm. or it's hard to understand what these people really think or why they think how they do. I don't know. It's hard for me to fit that into anarchism, but I guess on some level maybe it is. I'm not really sure. But anyways, one of them comes up to my table and is like, "Hey, what is your project?" Blah blah blah. And they're like, "Oh, you look and I'm like, I told them my name. They're like, oh yeah, like Ryder, that sounds so familiar. So does your project, blah, blah. I'm like, oh yeah, that's because once a week I spam your Facebook with my show and it always leads to a bunch of like fighting on the internet. And they look really awkward at me because I've definitely given a piece of my mind before. It was just a very like quiet, slow, like 10 seconds where he just looked at me and slowly backed away and walked back to his table and just like didn't want to talk to me anymore, which I thought was fairly hilarious. Yeah, other than that, my favorite part of the book fair, besides getting to camp in the woods and having some nice times up there, was the cruelty presentation. I really enjoyed it, which is why we recorded and put it out. And we might be able to put out one more. There's an Abolishing the Human one that I wasn't able to get to because I was doing the table, but we might be able to put that one out too. But we'll see if that actually turns into a thing that happened. But don't worry, if there wasn't enough drama for you in Seattle, the Bay seems to have plenty, huh?
Wait, wasn't there a whole fight thing in Seattle that you're leaving out?
Oh yeah, I forgot I missed it. Someone like headbutted someone's teeth out. I'm not really sure what went on. I wasn't there. It seemed fairly uninteresting to me because I didn't see it and I didn't know any of the people.
But right.
There was a headbutt. A tooth got flown.
But at least to build up into what the drama might have been that you were...
Sure, sure. Yeah. So that happened.
Yep.
This is the thing that happened in the real. All right. So, speaking of the drama.
Yeah. So, for all those who don't know, I think we talked about this last time me and Ryder got together here about Bob Black coming into town and some goofball punching him.
Yeah, I don't think we got into like a long conversation, but maybe it's more appropriate to have to break it down a little more now that we've had some time and space to think about.
Well, there's been a whole series of ongoing whatever it is since Bob Black has returned to the United States from his trip to the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
which apparently the Bay Area was just a pit stop in between.
Yeah, it seemed like it. I mean, I think he was there for quite a bit or something.
Yeah, he went there for 3 years, a few different speaking things. And
yeah, so why don't you talk about it a little bit? Because I'm more estranged from the situation in New York because I've only read a little bit of Bob Black. Has it never really been a big influence on me. I'm obviously not, you know, friends with him, so.
Well, the only way his writing really ties into this is, well, there's two major ways. But the first one is he has written some lengthy pieces against enemies of his, people that have gotten on his bad side for one reason or another. So he's someone who is sort of known for, if you get on Bob Black's blacklist, then... Yeah. He's going to come after you and basically try to destroy your life in one way or another.
Yeah.
So the other way his writing relates to this is the event that was hosted out here that he was punched at was put out by his publisher, which is Little Black Cart. And one of the people that... I don't know what... Is it called work when it's a collective?
Say collaborates. That's a beautiful word.
Collaborates.
Yeah.
One of the people that collaborates on that project is Aragorn, who became the focal point for Bob Black's revenge. And the Morgan Elliott person who punched Bob kind of has fallen by the wayside as a out-of-touch character that... just kind of factors in to fill a spot in this ongoing feud between Bob Black and Aragorn.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess Aragorn wrote a eulogy for him while he was still alive. That was a move right there. It is. I don't know. It's hard to talk about it because, for me at least, I think the whole event obviously was ridiculous because you know I tend to. I've known this person for quite a while that, you know, did the thing.
Who?
The person that hit Bob or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And my relationship with this person has been like, oh, they're like a sweet person who a long time ago was like, oh, they're a sweet person who unfortunately talks incessantly. And I'm someone who talks a lot, obviously. So if I'm telling you someone can't get a word in with someone, it really means something. And I've never been able to get a word in with this person besides like literally talking over them. That's the only way to get a word in with this person. And every other word out of their mouth is green syndicalism, which is just endlessly annoying. And they're always kind of looking for the fucked up thing. They're just one of those. They're kind of like that human being, basically. And so I don't really have sympathy for either of the people too much when it comes down to it. do you think there's anything important about it? Do you think it was just like a stupid thing that happened? Or like, do you think there's anything people can learn from it?
Well, the way I look at it, and I don't know if this would make sense to other people, but to me, what has happened with this dispute is basically the same thing that would happen between a record label and one of the bands that is on the label. If they got, if they were unsatisfied with the security and the whatever of the event that they performed. So basically, I think, you know, it kind of seems to me like Bob Black is a little bit of a diva in this case. And so I guess I'm basically on Aragorn's side. I don't see why it is this big of a deal to Bob Black.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't know. You know, he's just digging a hole for himself, as people do all the. It's hard to be a person who's out there and isn't necessarily tactful and kind of acts on their feelings a lot and kind of goes off their feelings quickly without putting much thought into it. We're gonna talk about this later, but like existing in a scene or milieu or whatever and doing these things is not a way to be able to make friends and stick around, if that's even something you're interested in. But you can't really lash out, especially publicly. It's not going to work, you know?
Yeah, well, I just think it's a little bit unfortunate that there is a lot of clarity coming from the way that Bob Black interprets the event. And
yeah, totally.
I mean, if I were suspicious that Aragorn was setting him up or something like that, I would have a little bit more sympathy with the way that Bob Black is handling it. But I mean, it's too much. It's like now it's at the point of just being the absurd kind of political feud that happens everywhere in our culture.
Yeah, I agree. It's just more spectacle at this point because people want to know what's going on. And, you know, now we're telling people what's going on because we were there, but really not that much went on. It was, you know, a five, six, 7 second ordeal, and that was over. It was pretty short deal. It wasn't like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and inconsequential.
Totally inconsequential. It's not like they were friends or did projects together. It's not going to affect anything that goes on, really, in any real way.
It didn't stop the event.
It didn't even stop the event, right? Like, the event continued on, unfortunately, for a long time. I personally found the talk to be not as inspiring as reading. I actually did like the abolition of work essay quite a bit, and read it, and the talk I found not quite as interesting. But
I mean, the one tangible consequence that it has had is it has caused a split between a writer and a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And what more could Morgan want? And
yeah,
that's the part
that's
that kind of sickens me and pisses me off.
That's interesting, because I didn't think about that, because I thought, like, what more could you want from this person? Like, they're obviously, you know, not living the dream life at this point. You know, they're not rich. They're not super well-read. You pretty much got what you want if this person's your enemy. And I guess the final thing you could really want is their books not to be around anymore. So
right, yeah. If I knew it was this easy to have somebody ask their publisher to destroy their books, I would be punching everybody in the face. Because I really don't like to read a lot of these books.
Well, see, what you could do, Squee, is you could punch Michael Schmidt in the face, and you could do an anti-fascist action while also getting someone's books off the shelf. It could be like a two-bird, one-punch.
Are there any free tickets to South Africa laying around?
I don't know. I would say I'd go with you, but that's one of the sharkiest places in the world. This is coming from the spot I surf. Literally is called the Red Triangle. Hey, do you know this?
No, but I like how sharkiest is literal for you.
So, oh, they're real sharks. They come from the real. So, from Santa Cruz, which is an hour and a half south of San Francisco, to San Francisco, to these islands called the Farallon Islands, off the coast in between, forms a triangle where the great white sharks meet up specific times of the year in the fall, which is right now. So if you don't hear from me again, it's a good chance I ended up in Jaws Belly, and it's because I was surfing the Red Triangle. And I even am hesitant to surf in South Africa because of this, because it's so sharky there. They have shark nets. It's like a whole fucking situation over there.
So what we're talking about here is there's a author, Michael Schmidt, who put out a book with Lucien Vandervelt called Black Flame, and it's a very divisive book that documents the history of what they consider sort of the authentic anarchist movement that has existed since the late 1800s.
From what I understand, it's mostly just like kind of workerist, trans, like red anarchist.
Very much. And they exclude Proudhon. They exclude Stirner as not
explicitly,
anarchists.
Right?
Yeah. And some of the people they accept are questionable, to say the least. Anyway, so this author has already kind of been on a thorn in the side of anyone that wants a different history of anarchism to exist. But now AK Press has released something of a
that was pretty weird.
A claim that they have something kind of like evidence, so-called, that they're going to someday
it's been like a week now,
present
right?
to the world
At
that
least.
Michael Schmidt is a fascist infiltrating the anarchist movement. And this has been another dramatic moment for the internet.
Yeah. Well, I think it's... I don't know. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say I'm not... like, vague accusations of fascism aren't real turn-on for me. You know, like, if there's any anti-fa person living inside me, which, I don't know, I tend to take my beliefs or ideas or whatever in a different direction, but telling me someone is a fascist and that you're going to tell me about it sometime in the future, that's not really enough for me. I'm just going to, you know?
Well, I mean, the thing is, we're... I think we'd be expected to give AK Press a little bit of credit here.
Why?
Because they took action. They unpublished the books that they were already publishing and then refused to publish a third book he's working on.
How do I get them to unpublish more books? That's my question.
I believe the method is to not infiltrate the anarchist movement, but try to infiltrate the national anarchist movement, and then create a Facebook profile with your own picture as the not you. So you got to be you being not you, and then you also have to get a disease that makes you forget everything important that you wanted to say about why you're not actually responsible for saying anything.
Having kids, got it.
Yeah, so I'm still left with the question of how they're, like, I don't know. On most levels, I just don't care because I personally, you know, AK Press releases something every once in a while I would potentially read if someone put it in front of me and while I was taking a shit or something. But for the most part, it's hard enough to tear me away from Eastern European fiction from the Holocaust already. But seriously... I don't know. It's hard to find much effort to care about the drama of the AK Press writers.
Well, the part that I like is, so one of the things that was happening before I moved to the Bay Area was the post-left, nihilist, anarchist sort of crowd had been getting accused of being fascist or
right.
whatever the 10-cent word is.
Sure.
And... you know, syndicalists and the red anarchists and lefty types hadn't really had that experience, not that I remember.
Yeah, me neither.
So, and then the Bob Black thing happens, and then, you know, a lot of people's big hatred for him comes out of his shitty puns that
right.
are important enough for him to, you know, publish. So technically he's racist. So yeah. Now there's someone on the other, you know, whatever. It's the fascism is now in, it's everywhere. The creeping, it's coming out of the goth music and it's coming out of the...
Maybe if we really want to take the radio in a different direction, we can just go full Joseph McCarthy and have like the new Red Scare for fascists within the scene. And we can just sit here every week and just list people and have them come in and we can put them on trial for fascism and ask them if they ever once... you know, we're anti-Semites because the two of us, that's really offensive too, you know? So.
I don't even think we should have a list or a trial. We should just throw the entire scene in prison until we know that the country is safe.
That's true. I am worried about America.
That the revolution is safe in this country.
All right. Well, we're going to play a little music. And while the music is happening, Squee and I are going to figure out how to make the revolution safe in America because it is unsafe. And if there's anyone who has daggers for it, it's the two of us. And this is Free Radical Radio. We shall return shortly.
Doggos.
You come by it honestly, the ugliness inside you.
You were born good. That's your birthright.
And now you can fill your life with projects, with books, and movies, and girlfriends. But it won't make you happy.
There's no cure for that.
That was Twisted by Stiff Fingers from the band Geneva. So if you enjoyed that, email me and I'll tell you where else you could find some of their fucking shit. So welcome back to Free Radical Radio, which is now populated by only cigarette smokers. So only people destined for a life of, you know, pure joy and living in the moment and not caring about our lungs, our sex lives, our teeth. What else is cigarettes bad for? Your throat, probably.
Tumor-causing, teeth-staining, smelly, puking habit.
I think it's bad for your skin as well.
Skin.
I don't think it helps hair growth either. You know what? I'm actually having some total freakouts and I'm going bald because I like having this lush head of hair on my head. And a certain bald friend of mine from England the other day was, maybe like a month ago, was trying to point out that I was bald. And it was actually this really hilarious thing happened. We were in the bank together and I was doing like a check or something and we're at by the ATM and he was trying to grab my head and point out how bald I was and some older woman, she's probably like 65. She comes up and he's like, he like looks at her, she's like, hey, look at him. Like he's going bald, isn't he? Pointing to my head. And she just looks at my friend and goes, don't touch me. You can't touch me. And he didn't ask to touch her. He didn't touch her. And she starts yelling at him like, you're not allowed to touch me. And all he was doing was trying to get her to look at my hair, you know, and whatever. And he just walks out and leaves and she goes and gets the bank managers and makes like a whole ordeal out of it. And I'm like, everything's okay. Like, it's just a really absurd scene that has nothing to do with anything. But anyways, do you want to redact anything you said about Bob Black earlier, Squee?
Yeah, you know, I think I was being a little harsh on Bob Black there, but I don't know exactly how to reframe it so I'm less harsh. I guess I have a lot more sympathy for the human being that lives inside of Bob Black.
The varying homunculas that create the existence of this supposed self?
I maybe a different way to put this. I like what Bob Black has done otherwise.
Okay. All right. I guess that's all Squee had to say about that. So we're going to get into a little bit of a conversation about anarchist scenes and subcultures. And hopefully it'll be interesting because I have historically not been a big participant in these things. I have always kind of found a struggle to belong more or less or never felt like I fit. and I think you might have at times felt home in some other places. I guess if we're going to talk about, this is Wingnut Confessional, by the way. So if you're into having segments, this segment is called Wingnut Confessional, where we confess to be wingnuts. And, you know, or we don't confess. Who knows?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we didn't even know what they were getting into. How would you define a scene or a subculture? So, I mean, if we're going to talk about something, I guess it makes sense to define it.
Right. So one of the interesting things about debating anything about the anarchist scene to me is I don't really think I've ever had a lot to do with an anarchist scene, mostly other kinds of scenes. But the way the word is used has changed over the past couple decades a lot. And the definition I've always stuck to is to try to relate it to, like, this idea of if you drive to this pub, like CBGB's, or not a pub or whatever, some kind of venue, whoever's hanging out there is the scene. So it's like a scene in a movie, or it's the scenery that happens in relation to some kind of shared interest. So you have a punk scene, or you have, like, a hacker scene, or just some kind of local scene, like, oh, it's the local poetry scene or whatever.
Right.
It's all about place in a way. And it doesn't have to be a venue. It could be any kind of setting. But the idea is that it's it's not really a subculture. It's more like the people are there doing it.
Yeah, I like the way you're kind of comparing it to that. It's making me think of it more like a movie now, where it's like there's a setting and a place, and it's elapsing over like a period of time, and there's some main characters and sub characters, but it can transition over time. And I guess the thing people tend to find most about the scene is the action that happens in it, or that's how it ends up getting defined too. Sometimes, is either by the action or the inaction. So I guess some scenes are known more as just like a hangout place, and some scenes are more as like that you come and this is what happens when you're here.
Right, or because people would say something like, oh, the Phoenix scene is really violent, or like, mm-hmm. The Tucson scene has a lot of heroin, or like...
Or the Portland scene is super leftist or super shitty, or the Bay Area is full of drama and splintered, or like every place kind of has a thing to it, you know?
Right, but it's not... So there's a different way the word is used now, which is to say somebody is seen, that it's an identity, and it's a whole new form of pop culture icon, which is the scene kid, and this terminology comes out of emo, as far as I know. It comes out of like the diagonal bangs in your face and all the shit you buy at Hot Topic.
Man, the bane of my existence has been having curly hair my whole life and not being able to have the diagonal bangs dye dark in front of my face. That's like the fucking best look to me.
Well, yeah, you're not missing out.
So much.
You can never look seen. See how different that term, though?
I think if people looked at me, they would just be like, oh, that person is in the surf bro scene, you know?
If they know how to use that language in that way.
Right.
But anyway, so there's already a definition problem even going into the fucking thing. Then on top of it, whatever could be called an anarchist scene that I've been part of in Tempe or whatever, wasn't really, it was basically just the leftovers from the Phoenix Anarchist Coalition that existed for like 12 years. So I don't know how you really parse a scene from people who had been in a group that's no longer a group.
Yeah. So I guess how would you see it differing from a subculture at all, if you do?
Well, subculture is like a sociological term. It's just one of the kind of smaller components of culture in general. So it's a little bit broader. It doesn't have to be tied down to anything local or... it's just the mass of artifacts and cultural shit and people.
Yeah, so I guess if we look at it through the lens of technological progress too, not trying to put a positive or negative on, just, you know, the internet came, it's here, it's been here for a while. Phones are here, blah, blah, that clearly has changed the way people go about doing things. Like, for instance, like 100 years ago, if somehow you decided you were an anarchist, right? Maybe you, Mother Earth came upon you at some point, or like the Emma Goldman publication or something, or maybe you just, you know, fucking came to an idea on your own and said, maybe I don't want a boss or whatever, maybe this sucks. You would have to like literally go out looking for people, right? And now I don't do Reddit, but I assume it's pretty easy to go on Reddit, or you can go somewhere else. And but the places, I don't know, I've such mixed feelings about this, because I feel like, I mean, obviously the conversation on the internet is so shitty, but at the same time, I can relate to being the only anarchist I knew in a place for a long time. You know?
Yeah. Well, another thing, so a lot of the stuff that a scene does is it kind of fills in for the lack of communication you have in an urban and suburban environment, where you've basically separated people so far from one another that if you have something that's more or less obscure as an interest, like anarchism or punk or, you know, whatever, bowling even, it's going to be hard to talk to other people with that interest. So what you need is some kind of venue and the different kind of shops that sell the commodities related to whatever that hobby is. So there's a little bit of a critique in there of what a scene is capable of, because it's usually tied into the market in one way or another. Because for a venue to exist, whether you're paying rent or you have to sell some sort of product in order to just keep events going and to continue to make this scene as a scene happen.
Yeah, so I guess it needs to reproduce itself to stay alive, more
right,
or less.
And on the other hand, what the internet does is what you could get out of it, which is finding out about the next show or some kind of underground book or whatever, now you could get that all on the internet. You don't really need to meet people or to go to a particular place.
I mean, basically all the gossip is on the internet. We're, you know, and news and stuff, like, you know, we put stuff on the internet. We both blog and do radio and write and whatever. Like, we're part of creating a thing that is easily consumed, more or less, from people who have no interacting with us.
Well, there's a lot there. The gossip's on the internet, but a record of who you are is on the internet. So in this kind of way, you don't have to meet people to find out some basic things about their character if you're going to believe what they put online. And
I mean, I'm guilty of that. I can see someone who likes the radio on Facebook, or who is commenting on something and says something I didn't like, and I can just look at their profile picture and see, like, you know, or their name is something like some Kropotkin joke. You know how anarchists on Facebook like to name themselves funny names or whatever?
Right.
Like Joe Destroy, or like Tommy Likes Free Pizza, or like John Conquered Bread or whatever. And you know, there's a lot of Kropotkin-y type things on there. And I look at that every time, and I'm like, I even like some Kropotkin stuff. And a lot of that had actually a big influence on me personally a long time ago. But when I see someone with that, I'm like just so turned off, you know?
Well, the other thing you said, yeah, I'm a little turned off too, but it's definitely different than having to meet this person and have a conversation with them about what they like, and
right,
maybe not even finding out they're into some shit that you don't like.
Totally. And maybe you have a conversation over mutual interest because you're sitting there meeting each other. Is a totally different thing.
Yeah, and there's some drawbacks and some benefits to that. Like, sometimes a person's a lot more interesting for other reasons than whatever their little hobby is, or
right,
their book of the week.
I mean, I think we can just look at all of our friend groups, and I think most of us aren't only friends with anarchists. Obviously, I'm not, you know?
Right.
All kinds of friends, and there's a lot to that, and there's a lot of ways, in my personal opinion, where people who I don't think are, who don't call themselves anarchists, where they do a lot of things that are anarchistic in really interesting ways to me, and more interesting than some of the people boldly proclaiming themselves anarchists to me. And I think the internet's just a shitty place for that, because you just can so easily write someone off, even more easily than in person, you know?
Definitely that. And the other thing you said too, about how you sort of do become your persona becomes a product in one way or another when you're on a social network. And so you're not totally eliminating this, like, tie-in with capital, if that's your goal as an anarchist, I guess. But, I mean, on Facebook, it's kind of like, from Facebook's perspective, every user is kind of like yet another Hydra head on the giant Facebook monster. Like, you're all a different advertisement for that company. So, I mean, there's all these different trade-offs, and what it ultimately comes down to is our basic relationship to property, like land, housing, and capital and labor, and all these kind of things that are the preconditions for scenes and for whatever replaces them.
Yeah. So, like, just for a little bit of background, what is your at least personal feelings and interactions been around? Like, what was the first scene you found yourself in?
The hardcore scene, mostly in Mesa and in Arizona and Phoenix.
How did you get, like, drawn into that? Was it through friends already, or was it like you had this thing you liked, music or something, and then you, because of that, you made friends through it?
It was, I was a skateboarder, and one of my friends got turned on to hardcore music from their older brother, and I started going to shows. I was actually in, like, a straight-edge hardcore band when I was 12.
Really?
And we were called Brave. And then everyone else in the band became Christian on top of it. And so
and so
I quit. But so that's how I got into it. And then, you know, if you're playing shows, you figure out where all the venues are and then you keep going from there. And, you know, 10 years later, you're kind of a staple in one way or another.
Mm.
And it branched off to other quote unquote scenes, but that was the main one.
Yeah, I guess the hardcore scene where I grew up in Orange County was kind of a deal. Actually, there's a pretty big scene there, and it never really quite worked out for me, even though I was sort of interested into some of that music when I was young. It just seemed like, I don't know, it's always been hard for me, because when I look at a scene from the outside looking in, kind of, if I'm more or less, it's like I'm not involved, so I can see people dressing similar or like acting similar or it's just always kind of felt weird to me looking in. And even when I see like anarchist stuff or whatever, like I can see how when people look outside looking in, it's easy to see that people feel like sometimes there's a uniform, and it definitely does take on this reproduction of itself where like these are the expectations for an anarchist. And obviously people who last longer in the scene maybe feel more comfortable doing whatever. There's just people who try to fit in less than other people, and maybe they dress different and act different or have an open mind or whatever it is. But it was always really interesting for me looking into the outside, because there's a time where I was an anarchist for a long time without other real friends that were, at the time I didn't think they were real anarchists because they weren't doing anything, and I defined anarchy solely by the action people were doing, and I didn't consider myself an anarchist. And I used to think, oh man, I like really want to be an anarchist, and I want to go live where other people are anarchists, and I want to, you know, be friends with these really awesome people who are doing like the fucking real shit, you know, like, and to me, I actually have like a really full memory of what that was. To me, that was like fucking, you're fucking out in the streets and you're fucking fighting cops and these people locked down. I'm like, oh my God, they just tie themselves up to shit. And now I'm like, obviously I have a critique of tying yourself to something, but at the time it was like the end all be all to be that for me. And it was weird coming into that, you know, several years ago and just now having a totally different opinion of it.
Well, I think the first thing I always notice when approaching a new scene locally or a new interest or whatever is cliquishness. You know, mm-hmm. It's going to be, and it's what I hated in high school. It's what I, you know, I've never been a fan of it, but I definitely become part of it too.
Yeah.
And I don't think that could be eliminated from, I don't know if it could be eliminated from social life, but so, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a uniformity. People kind of like, they'll find something to, you know, get some kind of group think mentality about and form a clique out of. And then you have an in-group, out-group thing, even when, you know, theoretically you're all supposed to share the same interest, and it turns in, you know, whatever's happening in the anarchist scene now, I've seen it in so many different places that have nothing to do with anarchism.
I think that was like the my final biggest social disappointment maybe was coming to like an anarchist scene and actually having a group of people who know for a fact they're called the cool kids and seem totally fine with that. Like, that was more totally the final straw for me, where it's like, okay, I have to come to some realizations about what this thing looks like and what my interaction with it's going to be.
Well, I was really fucking amazed the first time I realized that anarchists had a scene. And I think it had something to do with Against Me, the band. And just, like, there was, like, this tipping point where you had to be kind of this nutcase in one way or another to be so interested in anarchism that you're going to go into the streets with, like, 20 other people in your some wake fucking, like, liberal or conservative place, in my case, and think that anything good is going to happen because of that.
Yeah, totally.
But, so it was all, I mean, for there to be an idea of cool kids at all was such a mind blow to me that everything about this conversation is a little foreign when it comes to anarchists. I definitely understand it in the context of punk rock or in the context of like art and like the art scenes or right. poetry.
Yeah, I've been actually that's the only other scene I've been most involved in. I'd say is like poetry scenes in Hawaii and here. But yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. Basically, there's cooler kids. And whether or not they're, like, the better poet or...
They have the house.
That's a really... They have a venue away from the main venue.
Actually, that's a really good point. I moved... When I was really young in Hawaii, I moved to a house that was, like, the house that had a lot of parties. And it was only one other person. It was just me and him. But his parents were, like, mega rich. And I actually got a sweet deal. I was living in this awesome house almost, like, basically for, like, paying nothing for, like, 4 years. And people totally treat you different when they think you're... It's almost like the scene... You can imagine the scene for me almost as like a sphere where there's like a center. And there's not really a center, but it's almost like it gets seen that way. And I think the closer you are to the center of it, the more people like get pulled into your gravity. And it turns into this whole gravity amongst itself where people are getting pulled into this thing that doesn't really exist, right? It's just because you might have more social ties.
Well, and for Freud, this would be the phallus, right? This is that invisible... power thing. Nobody knows what it is, but it keeps pulling you in because somebody else wants it. Now, the house thing is actually really interesting, though, because this comes back not only to property, but to law, right? The state. And what happens at the houses is the illegal shit that you can't do at the places that need to maintain their license.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and that could be as innocent as, like, having sex, or it could be, like, fucking shooting up and whatever. So there is this weird interplay between risk and the state and property that to me makes scenes questionable as a good thing for anarchists, especially if it costs a lot of money to keep creating it.
Yeah, so I guess if So, I mean, it's obvious we both have mixed feelings about scenes and what they look like and how they interact and whether or not, even if you're taking a way of looking at things, is this effective? Is if I have certain things I want, are these effective ways to get them? Like, is the scene helpful for that? Is it helpful to, if your goal is to proliferate anarchy, is the scene helpful? So I guess the question is, like, what else is there? Is there a possibility for something else to exist? Is there a way for the... to reform the scene or to have a better scene, or is that even something worth doing, or what is there really basically is my question besides that.
I definitely think the character of a scene can change, and I think there's always room for that to happen. I think the alternatives though would be like some of these land project type of...
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of too in my head.
But that's what it is, because what it comes down to is you're either in the metropolis trying to deal with the fact that you're arbitrarily associated with all these fucking people you want nothing to do with, and then some kind of internet or brick and mortar way to meet other people. And that those are your options. That's kind of like the plight of the urbanized person.
Yeah. So, both of us obviously know several antisocial anarchists who more or less don't have much interest in interacting in the scene, but kind of stick around the perimeter of it. So like definitely somewhere in, if you're looking at the scene or milieu or whatever as a sphere, right, these people clearly exist somewhere within it, yet, and I think I can be guilty of this, and want to see themselves as antisocial, you know? And I'm trying to feel like, where does that actually fit into this conversation?
Well, not doing that is to be like some other people that I know who live with their parents still, and their social life is whatever weird job they have and maybe going to like the shit kicker bar down the road and then the internet. So if you're going to relate to people because of your interest in anarchism and you don't want it to be purely online and you're not going to start a land project, you're going to have some kind of scene. And you're going to be related to it in some way. You really just have to go and have kids and like really have this separate kind of life to, and then you're still going to be remembered. So even then, like once you touch it, maybe.
Yeah.
But it does stain you.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty obvious that the bigger the scene is, more likely it is to be shitty, which is, I mean, just one of the basic arguments against the mass movement in general is because I think when you see a big scene, you see people with personal conflicts and they so easily can jump to, like, I'm sure, I don't know what Arizona looks like, but I don't think it's as easy in the Bay as it probably is there or other places to just jump between the seven or eight different anarchist scenes here. There's in Oakland, there's probably three or four differently and distinct queer anarchist scenes, more or less. And, a nihilist scene and a social anarchist scene and a cool insurrecto scene and there's some primitivist punks around and there's crusties and there's whatever, you know?
Well, and the thing with Arizona is maybe more now than before, but it's hard to even say there's an anarchist scene in particular. It's that anarchists are in other scenes, usually music or just a more broader radical scene. You said the word movement, though, and I think when people say movement, sometimes they mean the anarchist scene, and I always think this is a weird...
Yeah, I noticed that online a lot lately, actually. I've been seeing that, and a kind of conflation between those two things, and I'm like, that doesn't really work for me.
No, the movement is supposed to, in a way, it's even more impersonal than a scene is. And usually related to some kind of leftist politics.
That's what I think of when I think of AK Press, basically, is I think of a movement. And it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if you're friends. There's an idea. There's a set of principles. Anarchy is this defined thing, which means order and ethics, a certain ethics and a certain way of going about your life and a democracy or whatever you want to call it. And even if they have a critique of democracy, whatever, do they? And it doesn't matter who you're friends with or whatever. It matters that you're part on the team, basically.
See, and there could be a movement in a different way where, and this is kind of interesting, the impersonalness of a movement could stand in for what a lot of people don't like about scenes. I hate to cede the argument to, I hate movements, but what you really want is to have this kind of, I'm an anarchist in a place, in a world with other anarchists, and we're going to have some basic, way of relating to each other as anarchists. You could do that without a social scene. But...
How? What do you mean?
Through this movement...
Oh, I see.
...kind of thing.
You mean so we come together for these things that happen every once in a while, and we don't need to hang out and have parties together? We can have all our own friend groups and do our own thing, but when it's time to fucking daggers, we're out.
Yep.
Okay.
I think it's a bad idea.
It sounds pretty pretty bad.
And then you need, what do you need? You need NGOs or something so that you could have your hired fucking people to go fire. I don't know what these assholes do.
Yeah, we should start a canvassing for anarchy pyramid scheme. That's how we should fund our lives so we don't have to work anymore.
Because anarchists have so much money.
I guess my final point on that is
fair point. Red
Dog. Is that's the wager. How much energy and really, how much money are you going to put into creating a scene when the internet's around?
And I think we know some people who've invested quite a bit of time in there and have pretty mixed feelings about the amount of time and money they've invested in their projects and in their local scenes. Well, when the cards are on the table and things are left looking, you're left looking in the rearview mirror at like 5, 10, 15 years of action, you know?
Yep.
All right, so might as well end on a bleak as note as possible. If you want to make yourself happy, go read some Renzo Novatore after this, because this was definitely not that today. So this is Free Radical Radio, and we ease back into it with a little bit of maybe some wonkiness, maybe something interesting. But you can find us online at freeradicalradio.net. You can email us at freeradicalradio@riseup.net. I think we still have a Tumblr. It's freeradicalradio.tumblr.com. I don't know if we have a Tumblr. Maybe Squee can go on there and see. I've totally, for personal reasons, I don't go on Tumblr that I keep being vague about.
I don't use it. I don't know what it does.
It's you Tumble.
Yeah, is it kind of
like why relay? This is why your identity politics game is total shit. You got to really get on Tumblr to get deep on like the next level shit. Yeah, this is Free Radical Radio. We should be hopefully putting out more audiobooks soon. We should be doing more episodes pretty often now. And yeah, feel free to email us about anything you want to talk to us about, and maybe we'll respond. Maybe we'll just smoke cigarettes outside and not. Who knows? All right. Thanks for listening.